is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We begin our number two of the Lombardi Line. Of course, this show is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Dave Ross alongside Michael Lombardi. Great to have Michael in town here in Las Vegas at Circus Sportsbook. And you look at the boards now, and we've got futures markets out there. And obviously, a hot one is going to be the offensive Roy, the rookie of the year. Yeah. And of course, we'll get to the defensive players. I know there were some that were actually drafted in the first round.
But you know, you're a Chicago guy, David. This market is going to get saturated.
Oh, it's
saturated.
Williams money is coming in.
Bears fans are probably still voting for Justin Fields to be MVP. And he's not even on their team. I mean, we've seen Bears fans do the remarkable. I don't think we're going to see it again. But to move the number on Mitchell Trubisky as MVP the way they did that, you got to take your hat off to their loyalty. I mean, you really have to admire. I do not say this as in jest, right? Bear fans are remarkable. They truly were hook, line, and sinker. They told me, don't come to Chicago. You'll get run out of the town, right? I used to do Mully and Hall.
Yeah.
I did that show all the time, and they would kill me, right? For telling the truth. And then obviously when I was killing Justin Fields, nobody wanted to hear it. They all thought I was a joke. And, you know, the same thing with the Sweat trade. Like I said, look, Sweat's a good player, but you don't have to give up a second round pick for Sweat. You could have given Sweat all the money he wanted in free agency.
And he's coming. And you saved a pick.
You could have saved a second round pick. But forget that. They're going to move this number. They're going to move it significantly. And if they don't move it on, they're going to move it on Odunze too.
Oh, yeah.
You got to admire them. They put money where their mouth is.
Well, this is something I talked about on Chicago radio this week. I don't know. Rome Odunze, by the way, is 18-1. Caleb's 2-1.
But you know, Stormy made a great point yesterday. You can't vote for Odunze.
Right.
Caleb's got to be the guy.
It's hamstrung, right?
Yeah, so it's like, to me, that's a St. Jude's pick. You might as well, you're not going to give that one. That one has to be, if he's having a great rookie year, it's because Caleb's throwing him the football.
Right. I mean, the only way that Rome Odunze at 18-1 could possibly be that is if Caleb, God forbid, got hurt and somebody else came in and Rome had massive numbers, right?
I can't. If somebody else comes in, I mean, they're not going anywhere, and they can't be an 11 personnel team with somebody else anyway.
So Caleb Williams could look like a really good pick until they get to December. 2-1, by the way, as the betting favorite. And then you got to go down the board to 6-1 before you get to Marvin Harrison Jr., who is the second betting choice there.
I think Harrison's the best play because there's no other receiver there.
Right.
And Murray's going to gravitate towards throwing him the football. And I think to me, he's, you know, one thing about Harrison that you admire about his play is, and I say this with respect, he's usually covered. He's not a separation receiver. He's going to, you know, and you could separate the Big Ten. I get all that. But I mean, in the NFL, he wins. He's going to win with his size and his incredible body control and hands. He's got the thing when you watch Harrison play, he has the qualities that you want in terms of balance and the ability to jump off of 1 foot and catch the football and have great eye-hand coordination. So, you know, with Murray there and Drew Petsick, the offensive coordinator, they're going to get him the football.
I really like the job that Gannon did in year one out there in the desert. Can Kyler have a resurgence because of a kid like Marvin Harrison? Is there a possibility of that? Because I felt like they're kind of waiting to ride him out of town. And
I would ride Murray. If I were them, I would have not paid the money. I think they overpaid. They did the contract way too early.
Mm.
You know, and look, let's just be clear here about Kyler Murray, right? When the play breaks down, Murray is very good. You know, and then we get into the beep beep, the mayor of Munchkin Land. But and then he makes plays. But what's happened lately is people are very aware of that. And so you rush him a certain way, you keep him in the pocket. You know, this is a kid, again, much like Trevor Lawrence, much like Daniel Jones, that can't throw the ball down the field. His career average per attempt is 7.0. Last year, he was at 6.7. Before the knee injury, he was at 6.1. The best year he had was at 7.9 3 years ago. That was his best year when people were allowing him to move around the pocket. But once this is a little bit like Kyler Murray's a little bit like a basketball player who can only go to his left.
Mm.
And once people figure out he has no right hand, they take away your left. It's Stacey King. Remember him?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Charles Barkley said he couldn't even use his left hand for right hand for anything, right? So that's kind of Murray. And so that 1 year, the 2021 season, where he was actually starting to develop and was throwing it well. Now the last 2 years, he just can't make plays down the field. And that's a concern. That's what concerns you about Trevor. Look, I was all in on Trevor Lawrence. I thought Trevor Lawrence was going to be generational. But the guy doesn't make any throws down the field.
Yeah, everything's checked down.
And everything's boom, get it out. Yeah. Now, people say, well, you got to protect better. No, sometimes the guys that can anticipate throws and hold the ball just a tad second longer. If you go back to a Super Bowl when the Rams played the Patriots, the Gilmore interception late in the game.
Yes.
If Goff holds the ball just I don't even know how to break it down because I'm not a mathematician, but maybe an eighth of a second longer.
Touchdown.
It's a touchdown.
They win the game.
But he threw it quick.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask you about Bo Nix at, 16-1 here to win this award as Offensive Rookie of the Year. Because Sean Payton's going to get the ball out of his hands, right? So you would think the system would give him the opportunity to put up numbers. Now, look, I think that's what makes C.J. Stroud's rookie year last year so impressive. He's throwing the ball down the field. Right. C.J. Stroud's taking shots like veterans, right? Can you dink and dunk your way if you're Bo Nix and play it safe to win Rookie of the Year?
Well, look, here's the reality. Bo Nix is going to play 1,200 plays. He's going to start every game for him, right? They didn't bring him in there not to be the starter. So he's going to start every game. You know, the guy's got, how many career starts does he have in college football?
And Auburn,
you know, he's got over 40-some starts, and when you break it down, he's thrown over 1,200 passing attempts. He's going to start. And what Sean's going to do with him is he's going to make the game so that what he practices and what he calls in the game, he's going to be able to execute. And he's got to rely on his accuracy, his timing, and his feet tied to his arm. And they'll be good. He'll be able to do that. Now, will he be sensational his first year? I don't think so. I don't know. But he'll do the things Sean wants him to do, and he's going to play a lot of plays. And if Denver gets better as a team and they win 10 games, then certainly Bo Nix should be a candidate for. Look, a lot of this is going to come down to the kid plays well and the team wins.
Yeah, the team success, the correlation play is certainly going to be in play. Let's look at the defensive roys here. And again, I like Dallas Turner coming out of Alabama. I'll be very interested to see how Brian Flores uses him in year one in Minnesota. He's the favorite here at 4-1. Latu is at 7-1. Mitchell's 10-1. Jared Verse going to LA with the Rams. He's 11-1.
I like that one, 11-1.
Yeah, it seemed like they were really high on him too.
And I like Murphy at 13-1.
Okay.
So, I like Murphy at inside at 13-1. I think he's got a real chance to do that. Look, Latu. I love Latu. I think he was one of the best players in the draft. But I think that where Dallas Turner has a slight edge over him is Dallas Turner has Greenard on the other side,
mm-hmm.
who can really rush, right? And then they've got they signed Van Ginkle. They can rush, and I think ultimately that's going to be the case here. And I think part of this too, when you're talking about these kind of teams, is you got to play from in front. To be able to get sacks and pressures, you got to be play from in front. You can't be a team that's playing from behind all the time.
Right. I look at this too, and
like Chop Robinson, I don't know how many plays Chop's going to play. Right. Are you going to put Phillips on the bench? Are you going to put Chubb on the bench? Right. Like, where are you playing him, and how many plays are he's going to play? I think that's the question. Not that he's not a good player. How many is he going to play to win Defensive Rookie of the Year? He's going to have to Defensive Rookie of the Year. You're going to have to say to yourself when you're going through this in your notes, say, all right, he's going to play 1,000 plays and this team's going to be really good and they're going to play from in front. Can that happen? You know, and answer those questions. Whereas, like, I know it's hard for a defensive tackle, but last year, Jalen Carter, everybody thought that was a slam dunk.
Yeah.
I think Seattle's going to be much better defensively this year than they were last year. No question in my mind. I think Seattle's got a much better team. I think Seattle and with when you got Murphy with Jarrett Reed and you've got Daquan Jones inside there, you got a chance to really put some pressure. They got Leonard Williams. I mean, this front for Seattle is getting back to the point where it is going to be more like the when they were back in 12 and 13.
I'm glad that Femi's not here today, because I think about when Tariq Woolen, he was, you know, number one, thinking that Tariq Woolen should have won Rookie of the Year a couple of years ago. He didn't get it. I know the New York influence sometimes happened. Do you look at that in some of these markets and go, hey, Sauce Gardner, whether or not you thought he was the best rookie or not, sometimes that New York thing does play, yeah. Well, right? They get,
you know, because the voters, I mean, nobody's watching tape as the voters. They're just going by what the perception is. It's all perception. Like, I'll give you a perfect example. We just saw it on the screen here. Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from North Carolina State. Now, he slid into the third round only because he was a medical. He doesn't have an ACL. But this is a kid that really, and what Pittsburgh has been looking for years, since they lost Ryan, the inside linebacker.
Oh, Logan Ryan?
Ryan Shazier.
Oh, Ryan Shazier, yeah.
Right. Since they lost Shazier, they've been looking for a Will linebacker that can really run.
Yeah.
And this is Wilson. He can do those things. And because of that, you know, they're going to be good on defense. He's going to play a lot. And this Pittsburgh defense, and Pittsburgh's rebuilt their offensive line. Pittsburgh's had a really good draft so far. They're really good. And if they can get anything out of Russell Wilson, you know, we know Mike Tomlin wins 10 games with bad quarterbacks.
Mm-hmm. So that could be a four-horse race in that division this year?
Oh, I think so. And I think, obviously, Cleveland, look, you know, where are they with Deshaun?
Right.
I mean, where are they? You know, we sit there and talk about, you know, Russell not being very good. When has Deshaun played good?
It's a good question. When the money they've spent on him, they are tied to Deshaun Watson, that's for sure, going forward. I'm very curious to see what Pittsburgh's going to look like, because I liked their defense last year anyway. They've added to it. Now,
well, they get Zach Frazier, the guard, the center. He's going to start for him. He'll play 1,000. He'll play 1,200 plays. They get the left tackle. He's going to play 1,200 plays. You know, and their Peyton Wilson's going to play a zillion plays. He's going to beat out a Landon Roberts.
When we come back, it's time for GM Translator with our GM next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
We continue the Lombardi Line here from Circus Sportsbook in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Great having Michael Lombardi in Vegas here for the draft weekend. This is going to be a lot of fun because we get to play GM Translator.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to hear some bites, and then you, sir, are going to break down what they really mean. We'll hear what they say, and then, Michael, you tell us what they're really saying. Let's start off with the GM everybody's talking about, Terry Fontenot down there in the ATL.
Terry, Super Bowl winning general manager, Fontenot.
My bad.
Who's never won one. He's only won 21 games, but that's okay.
At the end of the day, if you believe in a player at that position, because if we're all sitting here a few years from now, whenever it is, and this guy's playing pretty good for somebody, regardless of the situation, regardless of you sit back and look back, then and we pass him up, you can't do that. If you believe in a quarterback, you have to take him. And if he sits for 4 or 5 years, that's a great problem to have, because we're doing so well at that position. So it's just as simple as if you see a guy that you believe in at that position, you have to take him.
Great suit, though.
He and Raheem, they look fantastic.
Look great. But so did Raheem look great. I mean, what he's saying is just a bunch of crap. I mean, he's lying.
4 or 5 years.
I mean, he doesn't even acknowledge that you have to pick up the option on the fifth year. What he's saying is just a bunch of crap. I mean, he's lying. First of all, this is a man who put out a press release that said he wasn't interested in Lamar Jackson. Obviously, he doesn't believe in a two-time MVP player. This is a man who said that Bill Belichick wasn't in his top three of coaching candidates. Okay, so and this is a man who's been drafted an offensive player. This is a man who turned down Micah Parsons, who's drafted Kyle Pitts, the fourth pick overall in the draft. If you believe in a player, what is he talking about? What is he talking? And they blame Arthur Smith for everything. You know, I can't wait. I got to call Arthur Smith on the phone. We got to have a hash out on this one. We got to have a man-to-man on that, because this is absurd. Look, I have no problem. I like Michael Penix. Where I have a real problem is the institution of being a general manager requires you to have foresight and the ability to look down the road and say, okay, the season is over and I know what's wrong with my football team and I'm going to fix it. You know, when Brett Veach went into Andy Reid's office and said to Andy Reid in October, we got to draft this kid Mahomes. We got to figure this kid out. This kid's really good. They had Alex Smith. Like, they were not great, but they knew they had Alex Smith. But he went in there and did it. You know, that's the job of a general manager, is to understand this. Now, I can promise you without 1,000% uncertainty that the thought of Michael Penix never entered a GM winning Fontenot's mind. What happened was, when Zach Robinson arrived and when Raheem Morris arrived, they brought that sense of urgency, and they never tied the two together. And now I don't know how they convinced Arthur Blank to say that this was a good idea. I don't know how they did that.
That's what they did, and it is done, and Michael Penix will be there with Kirk Cousins this year. Let's move on to the next GM translator part of this show, and this will be Jim Harbaugh, the new head coach now with the LA Chargers on their first-round pick.
Yeah, it was a unanimous decision, and it was, like I alluded to earlier, I mean, it was all the work that went in, you know, the player that was on the top of our board, nobody rated higher than Joe Alt, the player, when it came to our selection that we picked. And, you know, I know the question is going to come up and you're going to say, like, you know, what about a weapon? What about a offensive lineman? We look at as weapons. That group, when we talk about attacking and what we talk about attacking on offense, offensive line is the tip of the spear.
I got to tell you, I have
That's
such
a team building. What he's saying there is team building.
Yeah.
He's talking about team building. He's talking about, look, you guys can all talk about drafting receivers all you want. If you study the National Football League, you can find receivers through every draft, through every round. But the only way you can actually get control of a game is through your offensive and defensive line. And he was talking about control there. He was talking about physicality and imposing your will. Because as Belichick says all the time, the game is about blocking and tackling. And what cracks me up is, even after he gave that dissertation at the owners' meetings about the value of offensive linemen, that everybody's dependent on the offensive line, people still put them drafting a receiver in the first
round. Yeah, well, because they got rid of two receivers. They traded away Keenan Allen,
And they draft Lan McConkey in the top of the second, which to me is the place to pick those guys. I got no problem with that, because that's where you get value.
The Packers showed the way, right? In the last couple of years.
I keep saying this. You know, the great GM Terry Fontenot picks Drake London, Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot picks Drake London. And you know, Brian Gutekunst picks Christian Watson at the bottom of the second round. Would you trade Watson for? Of course you would.
No way. That's the amazing thing about Harbs, and you nailed it right in the head. He says exactly what's on his mind. This is not rhetoric. Yeah, there's no rhetoric.
He's not lying. He's saying, look, he, like I do, and he's been trained by Coach Walsh. He's been trained by Al Davis. He was in our draft rooms. He understands the value. That's why this whole notion about the Raider way. Yeah, I agree with Rich Gannon. Browers is a really good player, but it ain't the Raider way. It ain't the Raider way.
Yeah, and Harbs comes from that with you guys, with Al Davis. And I just think he's building a foundation there in L.A. quickly, right? And that's the Joe Alt pick.
And look, what's funny? Here's what's really funny is what Atlanta did at 8, Harbaugh could have easily done at 5. Take J.J. McCarthy. How do you pass on that great talent? Because he said he was the best quarterback in the draft, right? But he passed on it because he's been paying a guy a lot of money, right? He paid a guy a lot of money who's a good player, just like Atlanta paid a guy a lot of money. Mm. So the team in front of him, that what we just witnessed from GM winning, Super Bowl winning GM Fontenot, what we just witnessed was a team didn't behave the same way. They didn't believe his rhetoric.
Absolutely amazing. Let's get to one more coach and get his thoughts, Sean Payton, on his new quarterback and the decision process there.
I was actively involved in trying to pretend we were moving forward. Oftentimes you hear this, well, if they don't get one here, they can go back and get this one. And I think that I heard those same comments. You know, when the Chiefs selected Patrick, and you go back and tune in to everything that was said, well, they could have got him later. And no, they couldn't have. No, they couldn't have. And so let's not worry about, and we all understand managing the draft, but let's worry about what it's going to look like 3 years from now. And that's 3 to 4 years from now when this class will be judged, and make sure we get the right guy there.
Your thoughts, sir, on that translation?
Well, I mean, he's been trained by Parcells. I mean, the draft is never about where you pick them. It's only about where you pick him for Mel, for Daniel Jeremiah, for all you guys that give out grades. That's where the draft is, where you pick him. I wouldn't have picked him at 28, but I would have picked him at 43. If you would have said that to Al Davis or Bill Walsh, they would have slapped you. Like, that meant nothing to those. Those guys are in the Hall of Fame. But we tend to listen to the Matt Millers and these other guys. Oh, I don't like that guy here. I like him somewhere else. It's a bunch of crap. It doesn't matter where we pick them. It matters how they play. That's what Sean's saying right there. It doesn't matter where we pick them. It matters how they play. And for all the people that said you could have got them later, they don't know that. You don't know what teams' boards look like. You have no idea where you're going to go. And what he's saying there is no way you were going to get Mahomes if you move back, because he was 11 and he was going to pick Mahomes at 11 with the Saints. He just didn't get to Mahomes, and that would have changed the trajectory of the National Football League for a long, long time. So that it's just like we have so many people that don't know that evaluate the draft. And I don't say this from a snobbish point of view. I don't know. Like, I don't know where other teams' boards look like.
So it's the old Jim Moore quote, right? You don't know.
You have no idea.
You have no idea, and you never will.
You never will, and they never will. And every year they come back. Like, what cracks me up is, I love this. Everybody goes back over your draft and grades your draft 3 years from now, but no one has yet to grade Mel Kiper's draft picks. No one. It's like you're not allowed to do that. You're not allowed to look at where Daniel Jeremiah had a guy. You're not allowed to look where Matt Miller had a guy. You're not allowed to talk about that, right? Pete Prisco, he's giving out C minuses. I mean, like, I mean, come on, Pete. You thought Blake Bortles was the greatest quarterback in the history of football. Where's your grade on him?
They can do it with impunity.
Nobody's going to challenge it. Nobody says anything about it. It's unbelievable. Look, I'm not saying Mel's wrong, but, you know, like, Mel's been wrong before, just like I've been wrong before.
Sure.
Like, don't criticize somebody else for being wrong. You know, like, I'm criticizing Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot because of the stupidity of planning. I'm not criticizing him for the pick of Penix.
Yeah, there's a difference.
The difference.
Is it where you take guys?
The same thing with the Sweat thing in Chicago. Right. I'm not criticizing Sweat, the player. I'm criticizing the impatience of Poles that he could have gotten this guy, overpaid him, and would have saved his second round pick.
Yeah, you could still have had the same guy that you have today in Sweat and had a second round pick to go along with your two picks that you just had in the top 10. So different ways to get there, certainly, from a GM's perspective. Great job interpreting there. When we come back, Chris Sims is going to join the program, too, to get a quarterback's analysis, just like we got from Rich Gannon in hour number one. Come on back. We continue the Lombardi Line in a moment.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Never too late to check out VSiN.com. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, and they do vary. Betting tools, betting guides, it's all there every single day. Always an article getting you ready for your betting day. So check it out. It is VSiN.com. Back alongside our GM, Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. It's great to have Chris Sims, a guy who knows all about playing the quarterback position in the NFL, does a great job on NBC as a sports analyst there. Chris, great to have you with us today. We talked to Rich Gannon in hour number one. For older quarterbacks now, what was this day like for you when you go back to the draft experience? Because for Rich, it wasn't so great. He's like, man, they want to make me a cornerback or make me a safety. What about for you, Chris? Because you knew you were being drafted as a quarterback.
Well, I did. I knew I was being drafted as a quarterback, right? But I was one of those guys that was like fringe, maybe goes in the first round, right? And then, as we know, kind of like today, like if you don't go in the first round, then usually like there's second round quarterbacks is not really a real consistent thing. So I thought there was a chance the Ravens might take me at the end of the first. They took Kyle Bowler. And I was like, damn, he threw more interceptions than touchdowns in college football. And I was like, I should have got on my knee and threw the ball between the goalposts, and maybe that would have got me drafted there, right? I was like, damn, wasn't that the quarterback of the team that was top five in the nation 3 years in a row? So that pissed me off. And then the Raiders had the last two picks of the first round. And on my visit, Al Davis was you know, I'm not going to say he told me he was going to pick me, but he was like, hey, if you're there, we like you a lot. There's a good chance. I love your arm. So I thought, man, I'll maybe at the end of the first round. Of course, that didn't happen. I ended up being the last pick of the third round. John Gruden called. It was an awesome moment, but yet I was pissed at the world. So I went into the NFL with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder for sure.
Yeah, and we ended up taking Tyler Brayton and made him a three technique. God only knows how. But we took Nnamdi Asamoah in that draft, so at least we salvaged
something.
I can't
be mad at that one, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But that was the one we had to force out a take because he ran 4.46. It wasn't fast enough, you know, but that was a hard one. The Tyler Brayton one was like, oh, my God, we're going to get, you know, we got Howie Long coming in here. All right, so
I hear you.
All right, you and I both were surprised, shocked. Like, let me ask you this question. How would you be in Atlanta? How do you think Raheem Morris and Super Bowl winning general manager Terry Fontenot convinced Arthur Blank that they should draft a quarterback after giving Kirk Cousins $100 million?
I really don't know, other than like getting done with a personal workout and maybe being blown away by it to a point where they didn't think they were going to be blown away to that extent, to all of a sudden to change their viewpoint or their thought there. But my point, and I think you're probably in the same line of thinking here, is, wait, you knew you needed a quarterback. We all knew. I mean, come on. I knew last year. Well, I knew Desmond Ridder wasn't going to be the answer, but you knew halfway through the year this past season that Desmond Ridder wasn't the answer. You need to be doing all your due diligence. When it comes to free agency, right, you already got to have a little bit of a feel for, wait, what's going to the draft going to be? I've dove deeper into the quarterbacks earlier in free agency and the draft guys than I normally would, because that's what I need this year for the organization, right? So that's where I'm shocked. Like, I think I texted you. We knew Penix was going to be on the board at 8 for 4 months.
Yeah.
So why throw that money out there? But, Mike, I don't have an answer for you. I think it's got to be something like that, that we dug in deeper and we're so much more impressed than we thought we would be. And then we met him and we went to a workout and we saw that. And he just climbed up our board to a point where we didn't think that. But that should have been – a lot of that should have been done already before you give a $180 million contract.
Well, but Christopher, like, let me ask you, like, you know, when I'm old. So when I first started in the league, we had 16 millimeter tape. You couldn't watch every prospect. But today, right, you know, you can sit in your office in Atlanta and you could be GM winning Super Bowl contender Terry Fontenot and you can watch every Washington tape. And I don't think you really need to see him throw the ball in person and know the guy had a rocket. Like, I can't imagine that you need, like, it was going to take you to April to understand this guy had a gun. Like, he's had a gun at Indiana. He had a gun at Indiana. He had a gun at Washington. Like, there's enough. And there, he was on national TV. Even if you don't turn
all
on your tape machine.
I know.
Even if you don't turn on your tape machine, it makes no sense. So, like, all right. So now you're Kirk Cousins. You've played in the league. You've been a veteran. Like, how do you think you feel as you come in this, and how does this work in the locker room?
Yeah, it's weird. You've already had a leg chopped out from underneath you as far as your ability to lead the team and be the guy, right? I mean, you and I both know, whether it's like Joe Montana in San Francisco, Phil Simms of the 49ers, Brady with New England, like, really good teams want to frame their team around, hey, we got the captain of the ship, the commander here. He runs the locker room. We get behind him. We believe in him because he's the guy that can get us through some tough moments and some clutch moments. So one, right, that's like already a thing with Kirk Cousins. Can he deliver in those moments? Now he's got a young stud who's confident and is very charismatic, and he's going to go on to the practice field looking like older white guy quarterback who's going to be a little bit limping around. And you're going to have Michael Penix Jr. hopping around the pocket. I put this tweet out yesterday, throwing freaking laser beams all around practice. And people are going to be like, damn, Penix looks good. Damn, Penix looks good. Damn, Cousins is okay. Yep, he's smart. Sure, sure. Damn, Penix looks good. So it's going to cause a problem. And like, you're telling me that if the Falcons start out 2-3, that fan base and the people down there are going to start going, we saw Michael Penix in the preseason. He was throwing lasers everywhere. Maybe we should put him in. It just caused unnecessary problems. I don't get it, Mike. It is definitely like brain blow emoji of the draft so far.
Yeah, Chris, you used the term piss missiles. That I'd never heard that one.
I didn't know if I could say that here. You know, I wasn't sure. But yes, it's a technical term in the quarterback world.
I think I'm stealing that one. You know, the Giants, we had heard from J.J. McCarthy himself. He said, oh, the Giants are really high on me, potentially at six. And we know, obviously, that didn't happen. He goes 10 to Minnesota. But what do you make of the Giants situation now? Is this a vote of approval for Daniel Jones? Or is this just something that Dable said, all right, let's get him some help. And Malik Nabers is a wide receiver. And Daniel, this is your last chance to prove it.
Well, they obviously had Drake May in a different stratosphere than the other quarterbacks on the board. I had been told leading up to the draft that it was like, if the Giants take quarterback, it's like Drake May or nothing. Right. So that was something I'd kind of talked on Pro Football Talk earlier in the week on Monday and Tuesday that I had been hearing that, which was surprising to me. It was. But listen, at the end of the day, I'm glad the trade didn't happen. I'm not a big believer in Drake May. Mike knows that. And also, the Giants, I know Daniel Jones isn't a superstar, but damn, if you had to pick a quarterback who got drafted in the last 7 or 8 years who's been in like one of the worst spots or the worst supporting cast and all that, you know, I have a little bit of a soft spot in my heart for Daniel Jones that way because I love the Giants. I watch them every week, and I just go, damn, there hasn't been great receivers. It's been really one of the worst offensive lines in football his whole tenure there. So I'm glad he's getting another chance, and their team has lots of holes. They needed an offensive playmaker, and Malik Nabers is a baller. I mean, Mike and I talked about him a lot during the draft process. He's an Odell Beckham Jr., Ja'Marr Chase-type talent. And listen, he's the type of talent. The Chargers got calls on Thursday night about people going to five, and it was for Malik Nabers. That's what kind of talent he is. Most of the league had him in a category of their own over Marvin Harrison Jr. in the draft.
Yeah, we've talked about that. What do you make of the Raiders taking Bowers at 13 when they can't block anybody?
I mean, I was a little surprised, but I'm sure they were a little bit like, they thought, wow, we're going to get Michael Penix at 13. There's no way he'll be gone before 13. I would think they got a little bit thrown a curveball to where they didn't know what to do. And then he just took the best player on the board.
Yeah,
right? Which I'd want to go, yeah, okay, that's your best player on the board, but you need some offensive linemen there. Like maybe we just like, you know, I don't know, trade down a pick or take an offensive lineman a few spots before you should. I wouldn't have been mad at them taking a Marius Mims or something like that from Georgia or one of these interior linemen. But yeah, that was definitely a little bit surprised there, Mike.
Especially when they, you know, the Gardner Minshew needs a clean pocket. He's 6 feet tall. He can't drive the ball down the field. I mean, you got to build that team. Now, they drafted some guys in the second and third round, but I'm not sure that solves the problem. Is there one team that left you scratching your head after day one? Besides Atlanta.
I mean, I don't know. Let me see. After day one, that's a good question. I don't know if there's anybody that totally left me scratching my head there.
Well, let me ask you, what about Jacksonville? Like, I didn't get that pick. Like, I mean, they signed Kirk. They have Ingram. They signed
Zay Jones.
I mean, how many plays do you think Thomas is going to play for them next year?
I don't know, but he's one of those guys. You're right. He's raw. He's young. I love his talent, right? We know that. But I would think he's a guy that you make the game simple for at first. Just line up an X receiver out here. You run go routes. You run slant routes. You run comebacks. If you're one-on-one, we think you can win. And they'll just make him that guy. That's what I would imagine. But I didn't expect that either, Mike. I mean, they got some defensive issues. They certainly could have used a corner, I thought, for sure. But I think Brian Thomas Jr. is another one that I think is like, was rated pretty up there as far as the talent on the field. There was just some off the field immaturity issues that I think he was on the board still there at 23.
Yes. I can guarantee you this, if Chris Sims was coming out in this draft, he would have been one of the first rounders.
Yeah.
I had no doubt about it.
The Eagles getting Quinyon Mitchell, Cooper DeJean, like, come on. What if they got a shamrock up their butt?
Yeah. Thanks for joining us in the Progressive Guest Line. Come on back. We're talking America's team next here in the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Do Do not miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA all the way through the finals. DraftKings Sportsbook has got you covered with same game parlays, live betting, odds boost, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. Use the code VEASAN. New customers bet $5. Get $200 back in bonus bets instantly. That's by using the code VSIN. Only on DraftKings, and the crown can be all yours. A team looking to get the crown in the NFL, they haven't had it since 1995. It's not my team, not your team, America's team.
It's America's team. That's correct.
I think the Steelers lay claim that they could have had the moniker America's team. They said they didn't want it, so Dallas got it, and so the rest has been written in history, that they are, in fact, America's team. Now, the owner of America's team, Jerry Jones, said infamously this offseason, we're all in.
Yeah, but I think you misread that. I don't think he said that he was all in to pay everybody. I think he was all in on paying. He's going to pay CeeDee Lamb. He's going to pay Micah Parsons, and he's going to pay Dak. I think he's going to pay Dak. You know, I mean, Dak has got to be able to take a deal that's. But I don't think that's the way he felt like he was all in. I really don't. I think people have misinterpreted
yes.
that. And I think it's kind of unfair that they have, but I think that's the reality of it.
Well, I'm glad you said it, because I felt the same way, that it felt like everybody's like, well, that means you're going to go gobble up every big free agent. You're going to just, well, you just don't have the money to do so. That's
right.
Why the Biotiches are gone. The Dorrance Armstrongs are gone. Those guys are right. Now in Washington, D.C. with Dan Quinn. And then they go out and they draft a couple linemen here. So it's not that I love these type of drafts without knowing, like, you know, the ins and outs of these players. It's a non-sexy draft.
Well, because they drafted two offensive linemen.
Right.
They drafted a really good guard from Kansas State. Can he play center? I think there's a question you've got to ask yourself. Could they put him at center? You know, they got Tyler Smith at left guard, who's a really good player. They drafted the Tyler Guyton kid from Oklahoma to be the starting left tackle, which they can, if he can play and he can play 17 games, it puts him ahead of the Tyron Smith, who can't play 17 games. You know, so they got away from that. And, you know, they're going to find a way. They obviously believe that the BB kid, BB, can play center or guard, or maybe they could put Zach Martin at guard. I don't know. You know, but they obviously drafted him with the idea that he could do that. And so they fixed the offensive line. Those two players can play 1,200 plays for him next year. And if Guyton's a good player, you know, or if Guyton, they put Guyton at guard and they put Tyler Smith at left tackle, that's really going to help their team. Today they'll come back and get another running back. I don't think they're that worried about it. And I'm sure they'll probably try to add players to their defense. They have a lot of needs, right? They have a lot of needs. They've lost a lot of players. They're a little bit like the Rams were years ago, where if they lose any of their key players, it's going to be hard. But their offensive line was not the same line last year as it's been in the past. One of the reasons why they didn't play very well on the road.
You know, I look at the Cowboys as a fan through the years, and I think the front office, pretty much going back to the Zach Martin pick, when a lot of people wanted Johnny Manziel that year, and they draft Zach Martin. He's going to go to Canton one day and go in the Hall of Fame. I think they've done pretty well with the draft picks. The problem with drafting well is you got to pay those guys, like the Dax in the fourth round, the CDs in the first round.
Right. I mean, Will McClay does a really good job.
Yeah.
I mean, he does a good job for him. They do a really good job of they find Jake Ferguson in the fourth round, and he gets them a really good tight end. They let, you know, they let guys go that they can't afford to pay Dalton Schultz, and then he goes somewhere else. And, you know, here comes Jake Ferguson, or Lou Schoenmaker comes in. I mean, he's a second-round pick last year. He's going to probably be a really good player for him next year. I think people get too caught up in it. I don't see the Cowboys as being a team that underachieved last year. I think they overachieved. Defensively, you've got to be concerned about it. Now, I think Mike Zimmer will make them tougher. Can they cover in the back end? I think that's going to be the real critical concern. Is Diggs going to be able to just guess and try to get interceptions, or play straight man-to-man? You know, Jordan Lewis, people attack.
Yep.
Bland had a lot of interceptions for him last year, but he's not a pure cover guy. People go after him. And so I think, to me, the secondary is key. I do think Zimmer will do a good job with Micah, because he'll move him around like he did, like Quinn did his rookie year. Because what you want to do with Parsons is you want him to where they can't set the protection to him, which they will. They want to set the protections to him. And if you move him around and they reroute and the quarterback's not handling the mic call, which most teams don't, then all of a sudden it can create some confusion in the front.
Zimmer taking over now that Dan Quinn is the new head coach in D.C. You mentioned earlier that in the pecking order, and by the way, it's reflected in the betting market, that the Commanders have moved ahead of the Giants. Cowboys are the favorites to repeat. Nobody's repeated in the NFC East in two decades. And yet the Cowboys are the betting favorites. Very small, plus $1.25. Eagles are next at plus $1.35. Yeah. Commanders at plus $7.50, and then the Giants at 10-1.
Eagles are a better team right now. The Eagles, as what Chris Sims was saying going off the air there, the Eagles went into this draft trying to improve their secondary. And they got the best corner, and they got the best mixture player in DeJean to terms of place corner and safety. They really did and they didn't have to do anything to do it. The league just was so willing to give to them, which is what Bill Walsh says all the time. Mm-hmm. He said this back in 1984, just be patient and then these other teams will give you all you want. And he was right. And so they have moved ahead of them. The Eagles with Barkley, the addition of Barkley takes the pressure off of Hurt. They got to run the football. As much as I know running doesn't lead to touchdowns, running does solve the problems where Hurts really is not a great anticipation throw quarterback. So, and they'll be better in their secondary. Now, Bradbury is still going to be a liability. Slay can still be a liability. So they're going to rely on that pass rush. But I think when you look at Bryce Huff, who they get coming off the edge, he's still a really good player. They kept Sweat. I think that, you know, they got to get those two defensive tackles to play at a high level, Carter and Davis. So to me, I think that's kind of where they are. They're ahead of the Cowboys right now. I think that's the case. And with the uncertainty of McCarthy, with the uncertainty of Dak's contract, I mean, I don't know what that weighs in. I like the win total for the Cowboys under. I do think the Commanders can go over the 6.5 if they just dress it up. Look, the Giants are relying on Daniel Jones, who's coming off a neck injury, right? They got Drew Lock behind them. And what Chris Sims said was true. Their offensive line isn't really good enough, you know, to protect any quarterback. So I think the Washington team, now they've made so many moves in free agency. But, you know, when you take over for somebody who really wasn't coaching or wasn't really demanding of the players, you got a chance to really uplift the team.
Getting back to the Eagles very quickly, and I like Vic Fangio a lot as their new D coordinator. I thought Sirianni did a good job of improving his coordinators this year.
Well, he wanted, so you understand, the reason they filed the tampering charges against Jonathan Gannon was because Vic was scheduled to go there. And Vic took the deal with Miami only because he has a home in Miami and only because he didn't think Gannon was going to get a job, because Gannon was lying to everybody saying he wasn't and there was tampering going on.
Wow.
So that's why they filed the tampering charges. And then for Vic to get out of Miami, that marriage in Miami for Vic and Mike McDaniel was a marriage that you knew wasn't going to last.
Right.
I mean, it's a little bit like what's that marriage with the senior bachelor? Like, you just knew that those two, I mean, what, they last 3 months? I mean, Bill Berman and I were talking about, can DraftKings put out some odds on when they're getting divorced so we could just make a boatload of money? I would bet, but I would bet that. And I would have cashed that easily. They lasted 3 months. I mean, that was the biggest joke of all. I text Jesse Palmer. I'm saying, like, Jesse, this guy's got no chance to last. He's got no chance.
Well, you know, as an aside, I had a friend that was on that show, Joan from DC, and she left the show. She was going to be the pick. That's the guy. He really liked her, and I knew she wasn't into him, and she bolted. But you're right. You can see that was not going to work.
That was not going to happen. No, no chance.
But is it a better marriage with Kellen Moore? Because Kellen, I think he did.
No, because I think Kellen Moore, you're going to have to, you got to run Barkley.
Yes.
He doesn't
like to do that.
And he's going
to
call passes all the time. You know, look, why were the Eagles successful 2 years ago? They scored 204 points in the second quarter.
Yeah.
They played from in front in every single game. They're going to have to do that.
Very quickly, because we only have 90 seconds, I do have to ask you about the Sixers, because I know how deep you're into this. What are they back in this series with the Knicks? It's down 2-1.
Well, I think a lot of it depends on Mitchell Robinson, right? You know, Mitchell Robinson, you know, is really an important cog to their ability to play physicality with Embiid, you know, and I think the other thing that's really helped the 76ers is the scheduling, right? So when they have to play with just one day rest, you know, big boy's a little exhausted,
yeah.
But now he's had 2 days rest. He played Monday. They played Thursday. He was fresher. Now they play Thursday. Now they don't play till Sunday. He got two more days rest. And trust me, he's not doing anything on those 2 days other than drinking Shirley Temples. So I think it gives them a chance to even the series. I really do. Because if Robinson doesn't play, it really affects them. This will be the hardest game of the series right here.
Were you impressed with his tackling techniques as a GM?
I think he should get suspended, but I don't think it should affect the series. I think it's unfair, but I'm sure that Nick, and look, that was a makeup. That game was called as a makeup call.
After game two.
Yeah, that was a makeup call game. I don't know if they're going to get that. I think the whistles are going to be really humming now.
Michael, great talking with you.
Great talking to you, David.
Always
thank you for filling in.
Thanks to Elliot, everybody behind the glass here.
Yeah, thanks to everybody who welcomed me here. I loved it.
Great having Michael Lombardi in Las Vegas. Cash and tickets. We'll see you next time here on the Lombardi Line.